Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound. It's John Boquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. So have you heard about SNAP? Well, as we come to the end of September, which is Hunger Awareness Month, we're on a mission to reach the millions of state residents age 60 and over who qualify for SNAP but don't take advantage of it. SNAP is formally referred to as food stamps, but we want to let you know that this program is there for you to help take the edge off your financial challenges, to help put healthier food on your table, to help you maintain a happier, healthier lifestyle. Then we'll plug into the subject of electric cars. We're going to talk to an electric car owner and one of the state's most passionate advocates for electric cars and the effort to expand the network of charging stations. Then we'll invite you out to an event coming up in Newington to help familiarize folks interested in possibly getting an electric car with all the benefits of this emissions and virtually maintenance-free transportation option. Then we're going to wrap up on the serious subject and talking about a different kind of vehicle. We're going to check in with the Connecticut Teen Legal Advocacy Project to find out how the agency's mobile legal clinic is making a difference in the lives of more than 3,000 state youths who are homeless or living without permanent parental support. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Boquette, right after this news. AARP Connecticut is joining with the EnviroShred CT, a social enterprise of Easter Seals Capital Region and Better Business Bureau, to host a Fight Fraud and Knock Out Waste free shred and e-scrap event. It's an opportunity to safely dispose of outdated and unwanted personal documents and electronics absolutely free. The event is coming up next Saturday, October 1st from 10 to 1 or until capacity is reached. And it's happening at the EnviroShred offices on Prestige Park Circle in East Hartford. AARP membership is not required. You can bring up to 5 grocery bags or banker's boxes per person to be safely and securely shredded at no cost. And up to 5 electronic items can be securely wiped clean of all personal data and then refurbished. You can learn more at aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. So we're opening up the last program of September, reminding you that September is Hunger Awareness Month. And with that in mind, we want to talk about a program that we featured here on the show a number of times back when it was sort of rolling out its new branding, which is SNAP, which is formerly known as food stamps. And we are welcoming a couple of guests in the studio, one who we've heard from before and who's helped facilitate a lot of programs for us with the Agency on Aging of South Central Connecticut. And that is Jane Wisolowski. She's the Director of Business Development, and she brought a new friend, Janet Perez, and she is a bilingual community educator and coincidentally just arrived here in the studio with Jane from counseling a brand new SNAP applicant. So all of this subject matter is not only in her mind at all times, but she's also fresh off of a situation where she's understanding and appreciating the challenges that a lot of people have. There is some great news about SNAP. So Jane, first of all, you handed me some paperwork here, and there's some spectacular information here, especially for older adults who use SNAP here in Connecticut. Millions and millions here in Connecticut, right?
Yes, it's a wonderful program that's being able to be rolled out to more and more people as they become aware of it. That's why we want to get the message out and help people become aware and realize that they might qualify, even if they hadn't have thought about this type of a program in the past, about their economic situation. You know, everybody's kind of feeling the pinch, and food prices are rising, and there's a lot of pressure to eat healthier. Hmm. They want to eat healthier, but sometimes healthy options are more expensive. And that's why this program has gotten such a big push, is because the funders and the funding for it is aimed at helping people eat healthier.
And this program is constantly featuring guests and callers that are working on helping to improve people's health, which then kind of rolls toward addressing the high cost of health insurance and the high cost that all of us taxpayers have to pay when individuals get sicker faster because they're not in as healthy shape as they might be if they had access to good, healthy food. And it's this vicious circle, and SNAP is really kind of plugging a really important hole in the system. But sadly, I guess, 3 out of 5 seniors who may qualify for SNAP don't apply for it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Janet sees a lot of people that are, you know, are very hesitant and shy about reaching out for this type of help. And you know, it's a real shame because, you know, it's such a great program, and they shouldn't feel like that. They should realize that it's a benefit that's going to help them and in turn, you know, help everybody. Mm. You know, the healthier we all are, the better it is for everybody.
Yeah, and then there's always the stinky pants that want to say, oh, well, you know, it's just giving more away, just this entitlement that's giving more away. But we can counter that attitude with a really interesting stat about every dollar that SNAP benefits provide. And if I understand correctly, once people go out into the community, it generates almost $2 worth of spending. How does that work?
Right. Well, I think Janet might be able to talk to that a little bit better because she's out there talking with the individuals directly.
Yeah. So
what do you think, Janet?
Yeah, because I'm sure you hear this. Well, you know, people.
We have to understand that right now in Connecticut, we have 62 million seniors that are using SNAP to buy healthy food. Mm-hmm. And one of the way they benefit from this is that they could go to the farm markets. And for every dollar they use, it will be double if they're using the SNAP program. Oh. So if they're using $10 to buy healthy food, they will get 20. So it gets multiplied.
I see.
That's one of the benefits that our seniors have. The other thing is if they need a cell phone, if they're already in SNAP program, they get a free phone.
Wow.
With 500 minutes for free every month.
That's fantastic.
Wow. And 1,000 texting free. Texting is unlimited, I believe, now the offer changed for seniors.
Wow, that's great.
The other thing that seniors don't understand is that they have this myth that they will only get $10 of SNAP, and it's not $10. It's really, you don't count your assets, and people forget that after you're 60, the medical deductibles are counted. The if you have a pet therapy, if you pay rent for that pet, if you go to the vet, and you spend money with your pet, that counts towards your deductible, and it counts as a medical. If you have hearing aids, the battery that you spend on the hearing aids counts as a over-the-counter medical prescription.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of things that people have to learn and know what they could deduct from their SNAP program to get the max. The max for a senior is $194. And I had the experience that most of the 88% that I have filled out the applications, they get the max.
Wow. Well, not only, I guess, given the fact that only 3 out of 5 seniors who qualify for SNAP don't apply, we not only need a lot more seniors to take advantage of the program, but we need a lot more Janet Perez's out there to make sure they're myth busting. Because the thing that I hear a lot is, oh, well, you know, if what good is having food stamps? Because then I can't own a car, or oh, I can't I can't go on SNAP because I own my own house. And all of those are factored in.
Yes. Remember, house, car, besides you're 60 and older, they don't count. But you know what counts towards your deductible? Your taxes. So if you're paying taxes and insurance on your house, that comes and helps you more to get more food stamps.
So people really who aren't on it
and who may have misconceptions or think they won't qualify. I imagine you're most of the people that you come into contact with when you come through the door, or they encounter you in a meeting or a workshop environment, they're thinking the low side. They're seeing the glass half mm-hmm. empty, and when they walk out, you reveal to them.
I get hugs and kisses.
Well, that's great. So that brings up the other myth, is that, you know, people have to go to the quote unquote welfare office and stand in line for half a day in order to maybe just get turned away or told they have to go and fill out a form and come back.
I could speak for myself. What I do, like today, I saw a client. I go straight to Department of Social Service. I have a one-on-one with one of the social workers. I give all the paperwork, everything is stamped. 2 days later, our resident or consumer will receive a phone call from the Department of Social Service to verify that the information that I bought in is correct. Once the client or the consumer says yes, he will receive his card with his SNAP, and at that moment, they will tell her how much she's entitled to or he's entitled to.
Great. And I guess at this point, it's important to reference to anybody that's listening, since we're listening all over Connecticut, is that just because we have our guests on from the Agency on Aging of South Central Connecticut, there are agencies on aging throughout the state of Connecticut. And so there are cohorts to Janet Perez and Jane all across the state. And this program is available everywhere. So all you need to do, if you're not in the jurisdiction of the South Central Connecticut Agency on Aging, you need to just go on 2-on-1 info line or ask at your local municipal social service office where the local agency on aging is. And a lot of times, I guess, Janet, the social service office works with people like yourself, counselors.
Well, the greater New Haven area, what we had done is a network of every outreach worker that is helping the needy, especially the to end the hunger in New Haven.
Right.
So we have a food policy group in which we get together every month, every first Tuesday of the month. And we look, where are our targets, our people that are in need? And that way we make it happen. Like if they need to go to a food pantry, if they need any other services besides food, there are people that need like they're insured or other things that are very healthy for them, or vegetables. How we connect this person with their food to be healthier.
Yeah.
And that's really what really helped me target the seniors.
Yeah. And I imagine when you're interacting with them, if something is going on with them that isn't specific to SNAP, you're a conduit to help them access other services.
The benefit of me being out there in the community is that I'm a choices counselor too, in which I could do a benefit checkup to that client or consumer and do an assessment, in which I will know if he's a vet and he is missing on his benefits. I'll be able to connect him with a social worker in the department of the VA, and that way he'll get connected with his services. If the person is disabled and needs some special needs for the home, how to get those services at home. If a person is a caregiver and is taking care of someone and needs help, needs a respite moment, or needs extra help of nurse to come in with the meds, that extra help that sometimes we don't look, but because we are trained for this, we could see the need of that person, we will make a referral to the respite program or to the home care program of the state of Connecticut.
So having that one-to-one connection has ripple effects that go way beyond addressing hunger and the other benefits available through SNAP.
And all the needs, like medical transportation.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, there's a couple of other points that we want to make for people that might be in specific situations that we want to make sure they're aware that it is not a barrier to applying for SNAP. If individuals have a lien on their home or some sort of financial lien on them, they may still be able to qualify?
People older than 60, property like their house, does not count as an asset.
Oh, so everything related to it is off the table.
The car and the house, they're not. If they have a pension and that pension is just once a year, it doesn't count as an income.
Mm.
So,
once a year. I see.
But if they get a pension every month, it counts as an income.
Okay. So, but there are still all those other factors that work in play.
Yes.
And finally, what about parents? We hear so much about kids having to move back in with their parents, but the situation is often reversed. A lot of young people are caring for their parents in their home, as I did, maybe you did. What about parents that are living in a household where the homeowners are way above or above the qualifying criteria?
Okay. When I sit down with a family member that needs help for their parents, sometimes the parent is in a special meal in which, or maybe he's diabetic or has a heart condition, or there's a special, so they don't eat from the same pot.
Mm-hmm.
So when they don't eat from the same pot, that means that they have to buy groceries that are healthier for their parent. So they don't eat from the same food, or the food is different, or the diet is different.
Right.
So the senior will apply for his SNAP separate, individual.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody's eating from the same pot and there's no health condition,
right,
which
different story.
It's a different story.
But individuals aren't automatically disqualified if they're living with a loved one or a caregiver who is financially stable or well off.
No, no.
Fantastic. Anything else you want people to know about SNAP and how easy it is to qualify?
I want people to know that there is help out there, but we can't help you if you don't call us. The people that we're seeing right now is by word of mouth. And because of the media. So that's why mostly we're trying to make sure that everyone gets what they need.
Okay.
But if they don't call us, we can't do anything.
Okay. And for anybody who might be out there listening who's Spanish speaking, do you want to just communicate directly to them for just a moment?
Y se habla español, así que por favor, llámenos si necesita ayuda para su alimento.
Thank you very much. A great quick workshop on SNAP. It used to be called food stamps, but as you're hearing from our guests this morning, it's far from what we probably conceive as the old food stamp program. Here in Connecticut, 80% of participants age 60 and over live alone. You have to be 60 to qualify for this program, but 4 million older adults use SNAP every month here in Connecticut. Sadly, though, only 3 out of 5 seniors who qualify for SNAP, three out of five seniors who qualify for SNAP don't apply. So 5 million seniors right now or more in Connecticut are missing all the benefits that we talked about. So we hope that you'll go out because the benefits are not only for you, they're for your health, they're for your community, and because of the benefits of being able to almost double your money if you're taking your SNAP benefits to farmers markets, they're also helping our agricultural community and industry here as well, which is another area that's near and dear to our hearts here on the Award Winning for the People. So we want to thank our friends from the Area Agency on Aging of South Central Connecticut. There is a Agency on Aging serving you no matter where you are in Connecticut. If you want to find out about where to go to meet somebody like our guest Janet Perez and learn more about SNAP or perhaps have them come and visit you and get you signed up, just go to 211 info line. And we also want to thank our other guests in the studio that got things rolling this morning. Jane Wisolowski is here as well. She's Director of Business Development for the Agency on Aging of South Central Connecticut. Folks, thank you so much for being in the studio with us. Well, as we said in the introduction, while Connecticut drivers have the opportunity to go green and save some cash by switching to an electric car, many still aren't convinced that electric vehicles are right for them. So we're bringing in both an expert and an individual who's an electric car owner and who facilitated the installation of an electric car charging station at her workplace to answer some questions and ease some concerns about performance, range, and cost. Connecticut Electric Car in Newington is hosting a free information event on October 8th, and Ed Ingalls is on the phone with us right now. He's the owner of Connecticut Electric Cars in Newington to tell us how easy it is to own and operate an electric car. So, Ed, quickly, tell us about how Connecticut Electric Car fits into your world of business.
Sure. Hi, John. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
But Connecticut Electric Car is a subsidy of Newington Electric Company. We're electrical contractors in Connecticut, second generation.
Yep.
And we launched Connecticut Electric Car back in 2011. And basically what we do is we specialize in the installation and repair of electric car charging stations for people that are purchasing an electric car.
Mm-hmm. And I see you're also affiliated with Tesla, which has gotten a lot of news in Connecticut over the past few months.
Yeah, they're really stepping forward pretty nicely. We are a certified installation and installer for Tesla Motor Cars, as well as all of the name brand. Manufacturers have come on board now with some version of an electric car. So we're certified to install any one of them.
Yep, great. So Connecticut has been on the forefront of a lot of energy initiatives. Electric vehicles is just one of them. And it's all about trying to find cheaper, cleaner, more reliable energy sources and savings for consumers. Tell us a little bit about your, some of the things that are important for people to know about living in Connecticut before they even really consider the prospect of maybe purchasing an electric car.
Well, the state, has really put their best foot forward and are promoting zero emission vehicles in Connecticut. And in doing so, they've put out some pretty attractive state grants and incentives to make that happen and to make people a little bit more apt to buy an electric car. And a couple of the state grants that they have out there, and you can find them under the DEEP website, under what's called Cheaper is one of their grants, and another one is called Brightside, and they are state grants that are put out for businesses and commercial people, towns, and municipalities, where they'll subsidize the installation of an electric car charging station.
So Connecticut has a goal of trying to put 3.3 million zero emission vehicles on the road by 2025. So could you just explain the difference between or the other options that people might hear about? Electric cars are not the only zero emissions vehicles they could buy in Connecticut, right?
That's correct. That's the most familiar one that people are that are on the ground now and that are really moving forward. But there's the others are the fuel cell powered by hydrogen are also coming coming around. But the electric car, the EV itself, is first and foremost right now. Again, on the ground, and I might add, the price point has come way down on these electric vehicles compared to where they were, let's say, 4 or 5 years ago. They're really starting to get, affordable for people now.
So that right now there's about, 2,700 plug-in hybrids roughly in Connecticut and 1,800 battery electric vehicles on the road. Tell me the difference between a plug-in hybrid and a battery electric vehicle.
Well, the battery electric vehicles they're strictly battery operated, and they come in what they call level 1, level 2, and level 3. where you plug them in and you have to charge the battery, and the vehicle basically runs on the battery itself. Mm-hmm. The hybrids run on a little combination of electric and and gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big difference between the two.
And another part of the initiative in Connecticut is also to increase the infrastructure for owners of these vehicles, and that means putting up charging stations. And as we talked briefly before we went on the air, I was in the room with you a little over a year ago when you were up in northern Fairfield County talking to one community about the prospect of putting in some charging stations or a charging station because there was some grant money available. How's that effort going, and is the state continuing to step up to supplement the infrastructure expansion for these charging stations?
Yeah, that's going really well. The state of Connecticut committed to putting in a charging station within 15 miles of one another. That's what their goal was. And that's where the state of Connecticut grants come into play, which I had mentioned a little earlier, cheaper and Bright Idea, both of which I said you could find on DEEP.
Mm-hmm.
And they will explain to the to business owners in Connecticut as well as municipalities on what's available for them for grant money. There's still quite a little bit of grant money left for that, and so that's really aided in the installation of these electric car charging stations throughout Connecticut.
Mm.
I think there's about 250 electric car charging stations throughout Connecticut at this point.
But not all public.
Yes, correct. That is correct.
So does that infer that individuals who go to private car charging stations may have to wand their ATM or their credit card in order to charge versus the public stations, or are all of these a metered type of a situation?
You know, John, as far as I know, I don't know of anybody that is charging a fee to charge your electric vehicle. I know that when you sign on with and you get a grant, obtain a grant, like as we did, for instance, over here at Newington Electric Company, we have a dual electric car charging station in our lot,
mm-hmm.
and there is no fee for an electric car to pull up and plug in. So as far as I know, no one has charged any fees yet.
Okay, great.
To plug in.
Very good. And so I like to learn something new every show, and this show gives me a new catchphrase. That catchphrase is range anxiety, which is the idea that I think affects a lot of people who get the idea that they love to have an electric car, but they've run out of gas at some point in their lives, and they remember what that's all about. And when you think of how many gas stations there are versus how many electric charging stations, I could see where that term would impact a lot of potential buyers of electric cars.
Yeah. Well, these electric cars, again, have come a long way in the last few years. I mean, they've gone from, having maybe a 30 or 40 mile range to now having 100 in a few hundred mile range.
Hmm.
On a lot of these electric cars, and I've always tried to educate our people that call us about electric cars and let them know that, electric cars sort of have a purpose. You might not want to buy an electric car if it's going to be your only car in your family,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to use it to go wherever, as your primary car.
Sure.
But it works perfect if your commute, let's say it was within, 50 or 60 miles, to and from
mm-hmm.
your work, because you'll go from, maybe a $600 or $700 a month fuel bill to zero. Because that's your commute back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to, educate people on that don't look at this as your primary vehicle where you're going to jump in this car and you're going to go to, I'm going to go, to Vermont, from Vermont, I'm going to go to Maine,
sure,
and we're going to go sightseeing.
Mm-hmm.
They're really not made for that. They're coming along, but they're really not really made for that.
Mm-hmm. So that might be somebody who would be considering more of a hybrid versus totally electric.
Exactly.
Car.
Yep. Good. The hybrid. Good. Yes, exactly. But you know, if you're buying a second car for your daughter, your son's going to college, or again, let's say you live in West Hartford and your commute is going to Hartford every day. And then maybe running around a little bit, and then you're coming home. I mean, it's a no-brainer. You have to have an electric car.
And I guess one of the other concerns that a lot of people have is the getting the power to the car, particularly when they're home. So there's some options on ways to charge these vehicles, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, typically when you buy an electric car, it already comes with a charger, and it's called level one, and you can plug it right into a regular wall socket at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from a 0% to a full charge, it may take somewhere around, 7 or 8 hours to charge an electric car that way. But most of the people that buy an electric car have a level two car charging station installed in their garage, and that's 220 volt. Everybody has 220 volts in their house.
Yep.
It's just like a dryer outlet, and that's what people will plug into. And you know, if you do own an electric car and you plug in and you have a full charge, you know, you can pretty much drive around town for 2 or 3 days, on a charge. So a lot of people think, well, if I go to the grocery store, I have to find a place to plug in, and that's really not necessarily true, because your car is going to stay charged for several days, especially if you're just going around town and going back and forth to work.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there's a movement that once again is being kind of led by Tesla for these level three chargers, which are like, you know, super super fast.
Yeah, they're super fast. Yeah, they're 480 volt, and those are pretty much, you'll find those along the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, you can go from a zero charge to, you know, to a full charge in the area of 30 minutes.
Wow.
But again, now you're talking about a car where you might be traveling across country, or you might be traveling long distances with. So Tesla's definitely out in the forefront.
Great. Well, we've got a free event coming up for people to discover the power of electric cars at your office in Newington on Payne Road. And that's coming up on October 8th. And so we want to tell people that they can go to ctelectriccar.com to find out more information and a lot of expanded information on what we're talking about this morning. But what we want to do at this point, Ed, is give you a quick break and put in a call to our friend Allison, Allison Stockel, who is the executive director of the Ridgefield Playhouse, and she is both an electric car owner and was instrumental in getting an electric car station put in Ridgefield at the Ridgefield Playhouse. So hang around. We're going to come back and have you talk for a few minutes about the upcoming event, and we'll jump on with Allison. Hang with me, Ed, please. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The Audubon Center at Bent of the River in the Southbury hamlet of South Britain is hosting their annual fundraiser, Bent Fest 2016, coming up next Sunday, October 2nd, from 1 to 4, rain or shine. This family festival will include a live bird show, live music, bird banding demonstrations, a craft beer tent by Voracious Brewery, picnicking in the meadow, a bird watching boulevard, river and nature walks, food vendors, kids' activities, and visits to their historic barn. No pets are permitted, but they'd love to have you. Admission is $10 per car at the gate, cash or check only. For information, call 203-264-5098. That's 203-264-5098 for Bent Fest 2016. So Allison Stockel is with us. We said we would be calling into her. Normally, we see her introducing bands or hear her on the radio chatting up the bands and acts that are coming into the Ridgefield Playhouse. But Allison's also an electric car owner, and she played a very important role in getting Ridgefield one of its first, or probably its first, electric car charging station, which is located at the Ridgefield Playhouse, and it's equipped for two vehicles. And typically, if you go to a show there, you'll see a couple of cars parked outside, hooked up, during the show, getting refueled or recharged, if you will. So, Allison, for folks that are listening who are thinking about going out to Connecticut Electric Car on October 8th to learn more about the prospect, what kind of car do you have and how long have you owned it?
So I have a Nissan Leaf, 100% electric. And I got it, I guess, about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So you're an ideal person to talk to because a lot of people have questions about the longevity and what kind of maintenance that these electric vehicles need versus a fuel-powered car. How has the ownership experience been strictly on the part of kind of an electric vehicle versus the similar kind of car you'd buy that was fully gasoline-powered?
Right, sure. So I actually love having an electric car, and for a variety of reasons. One is, in terms of maintenance, it's basically maintenance-free. Hmm. There is no liquid anywhere in the car. There's no water. There's no nothing. There's no liquid in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no parts that need, you don't need to get pumps looked at. Literally, it is just a battery that's hooked up to the motor, and you don't hear it running. Like it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there's a liquid in the car makes it cool on two levels. First of all, you don't have to deal with things like coolants and all this other stuff, but also it makes the vehicle very light. So you can go from 0 to 60 pretty quickly, and it's interesting because a lot of, I'm sure you know, because you're, kind of investigating the whole electric vehicle thing, but a lot of race cars now, you're going to see a big change in the racing industry.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to become, they're going to go electric. And when that happens, because they can go so much faster. And once the race industry does something, then the rest of the world sort of takes notice.
Sure.
Electric vehicles have been around for a while, but, until there are charging stations everywhere, just like there are gas stations everywhere.
Right.
People get what's called,
anxiety. Yeah, we talked about that with that range anxiety.
And that's one of the reasons. So for me currently, right now with my Leaf, I get 100 miles to a charge.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you're on hillier roads,
sure,
you can sometimes get more because when you go downhill, you charge your vehicle. Your vehicle charges automatically.
Oh, I see. Very good.
So now the opposite. So when I'm going to Danbury, I'm going mostly downhill because mm-hmm. Ridgefield is on a ridge.
Right, right.
I can actually pick up 5 miles going to Danbury.
Wow.
However, going back, you got to go back.
Take it away.
Right. You lose a little bit more because you got to push. You need more power to push it up
mm-hmm.
the hill.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, and you kind of get to know, as an owner, you get to know the little nuances of your car. If I do this, then I can, I kind of test it. How do I get the most charge out of my vehicle? So for me, it's a great vehicle locally.
Yeah, and for having it for almost five years, that's you've certainly are a veteran electric car owner. I think you got the Leaf the first year.
When it first came out.
And you're still driving it? No, and it's still awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's great. If I wanted to go the next step, to be honest, I probably would go for an electric vehicle that has a longer range. Something like, I know the Tesla has 300 miles.
Yep.
Because what they have now in New York City are charging stations in of the parking garages.
Right.
You
right.
have to get a card, a specific card,
sure.
to put it in. It won't just take money
mm-hmm.
or a credit card.
Right.
You have to go online and get these cards, which is fine. You have to know that ahead of time.
Yeah. And as Ed mentioned, the Tesla now has that supercharger that could do that 300-mile charge in about 30 minutes, which is incredible.
Right.
So, but before we let you go, just spend a minute, if you would, talking about the reaction you're getting from your patrons at the Ridgefield Playhouse about the car charging station. Was that the first one in Ridgefield?
It was the first one in Ridgefield, and we got such a positive response, not just from patrons, but from other people who work in the area were sort of charging their cars and walking down to Main Street, or there must be somebody who is in the same building as us because I always see their car being charged on it during the day prior to a show or something.
Okay, great.
So the town then went ahead and put, now there's one by Town Hall. There's a charging station in Ridgefield by Town Hall. And there's also one, you know, in Danbury right by the mall, right outside of Whole Foods. So, which is great because, you know, the more that there are, the better it is. The funniest, I just want to say one funny story, which is when we first got the charging station, the very first show after we put the charging station in, it was almost like people that have electric cars know where those charging stations are. Very first show, we had somebody that actually came down. They were traveling from Maine, and they made it into, like, you know, they charged their car along the way, and they came, and then they came early to the Playhouse, started charging their car, went out for dinner, saw the show. By the end of the show, they had, you know, enough juice to get them back on their way heading back.
Move on.
So it's very funny. That was like the very next week that we put it in.
Great. Well, maybe if you're free on October 8th, you can head out to Newington to Connecticut Electric Car and join the many people who are there and help, like you are right now, helping educate folks who are on the fence and maybe wanting to do it but not being sure that they could. So thanks so much for taking a few minutes. Allison Stockel is Executive Director of Ridgefield Playhouse, a 5-year electric car owner and responsible for installing the first electric car charging station in Ridgefield down in Fairfield County. So thanks, Allison. Great to talk to you. We're back with Ed Ingalls. He's with Connecticut Electric Car in Newington, and he's got an event coming up on October 8th so that a lot of folks out there who might have been like Allison was before she made the investment in electric cars and getting her own electric car, I should say, they can get more information and get a little bit more comfortable about the idea. Maybe not for today, but maybe at some point in the near future, they're ready to make the jump. So, Ed, in the last couple minutes that we have on the program, just give us the lowdown on what's going on October 8th.
Thanks very much. What's really going on October the 8th is we've decided to put on an electric car event. It's more of it's an informational event for people that may be thinking about buying an electric car or wanting to know a little bit more about them and how much they cost and what's involved. We're going to be putting on an event. We're going to have a couple of electric cars here. It's going to be an awareness event. We have a couple of charging stations here. We're going to have a couple of people from DEEP, representatives here, to answer any questions as far as the latest grants that are available and what incentives are there for the for municipalities and commercial customers in the state of Connecticut. So it's an informational event for anybody that's thinking about buying an electric car or if you already have one.
Right, and if you have one, you can enter in to a drawing, I guess, for a home charging system.
That's correct. And one of the things that I didn't mention, John, in our previous conversation was that, you know, we mentioned the grants that are available to the businesses and municipalities, but there's also some new car incentives. There's federal tax credits when you buy a new car that range anywhere from $4,000 to $8,000, and there's new car rebates anywhere up to $5,000. So they're making it very, very attractive now to purchase an electric vehicle. The prices have come way, way, way down in price. And they're making it very, 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 very attractive.
Excellent. Well, ct.gov/DEEP is the website for the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
Correct.
That's the coordinating agency for all the information that's coming through the state on electric cars, incentives, charging stations, siting, and all that. And for Ed's event on October 8th, and if you have an electric car, you want to bring it with you to the event because there'll be free charging stations for anyone that needs to, and you'll go home with a full charge. So to meet Ed and his team and to find out more and to get familiar with and hang out with a bunch of other electric car owners or aspiring owners, you can get more information at ctelectriccar.com. Ed Ingalls is leading the charge, if you will, here in Connecticut on electric cars, but not funny, a big potential money saver and helping to save the planet by reducing carbon emissions, along with Connecticut's goal of putting many millions of cars, electric cars and hybrids, on down the road through till 2025. Ed, thank you for all the work you're doing on this effort, and we'll see you on October 8th. Well, we're wrapping up the show, coming back around to a great friend of ours here on the award-winning For the People. We haven't talked to her in quite a while, but when we did, it was about the launch of a very, very important and innovative legal clinic, a mobile legal office that was launched out of Hartford. And we're pleased to welcome Stacy Violante Cote onto the program. She is the director of the Teen Legal Advocacy Project, which was established in 1998. Their first clinic was on site at Hartford Public High School. And today, the center's new mobile legal office is bringing attorneys directly out to community locations. And we're here to check in and see how it's going. Stacy, thanks you for joining us.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
So when last we talked, this was just rolling out. It was getting a really, really great response. So I'm excited to catch up with you to find out how things are going. But before we go on and talk a little bit about the mobile legal office, just explain to folks a little bit more beyond my introduction about the critical work and the complex issues that are facing the teens that you're interacting with here in the greater Hartford area. And I hope now at this point spreading out into some additional neighborhoods beyond Metro Hartford.
Yeah, so we are a private nonprofit law firm, and the Center for Children's Advocacy provides legal representation and advocacy for the poorest and most at-risk children and teenagers in Connecticut. So, John, you talked about our work in Hartford and some of the work we do in the surrounding Hartford, but we're actually a statewide office.
Excellent.
We have offices in New Haven and Bridgeport, and we do critical and difficult work in the areas of abuse and neglect, representing children and teenagers, in the areas of racial injustice. We do work in the area of educational inequities and youth homelessness and access to medical and mental health care. And really, we try to bring our information out to folks. We have two websites. One is kidscouncil.org, and that talks about the work of the center and the programs that we offer and has resources for professionals and some resources for teenagers. We also, though, have a specific website for teenagers called speakupteens.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really with a focus on supports for kids who are experiencing homelessness or are at great risk of becoming homelessness. Homeless.
Yeah. Well, thanks to people like you, people like me have a much better idea and empathy for the sheer number of young people that have to seek out your services through the Center for Children's Advocacy because they're virtually independent or have made themselves so, or who have been made independent because they've been cast out of their homes or living situations. But for folks out there who are thinking, oh gosh, how many kids could there possibly be on the street that don't have familial or some sort of state sponsored support, can you estimate the numbers of young people right now who are kind of out on the streets and on their own in Connecticut?
I can, and I can because we as a state have really started to pay attention to this issue. I chair a statewide group of folks who look at the barriers, the data, and the needs of homeless youth across the state. And this is through some of our partners we work with in the Reaching Home campaign to really look to end homelessness in Connecticut. And so in 2015, we as a state, for the first time, were able to count and estimate the number of youth in Connecticut who are homeless or experiencing housing instability. And so the result is an estimate of about 3,000 young people who are homeless or housing unstable right now.
Wow. shocking and sobering number for sure, which makes the mobile legal office, I guess, even more important. And I guess I should ask the kind of basic question, because I don't know it. Is this just one single kind of vehicle right now, or is the mobile legal office sort of the name for a movement that incorporates individuals who just go out in vehicles and outreach in the community?
So right now, the mobile legal office encapsulates both a single vehicle that we have, but also some of the efforts that we put into connecting folks to the vehicle. So we were thankful to have a funder approach us and who was willing to give us the initial funding to purchase a vehicle, and we have one of those taller, bigger vans that they're putting out these days mm-hmm. that we've actually retrofitted in the back with an office. And we can take this vehicle out into the community and meet up with youth in places where they traditionally would be, in libraries, at agencies where they might be seeking help, at rec centers where they might be for sports or activities. And we can work with them right inside the van because we have the facilities and we can print and look things up for them online and print out things that they might need. Mm. And the outside of the van has our website, speakupteens.org. And we do this because we put out lots of legal rights information both on the website but also on our social media platforms as a way of engaging young people. Mm-hmm. And so really the mobile legal office is us going out in our van providing legal help, but it's also making sure that teens know their legal rights through the social media outlets, and they know where we're going to be through our website and our social media outlets. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, and we've just started on Snapchat because we know that's the best way to reach young people.
Hmm. Now, you are working with individuals who are at risk of becoming homeless, many or most of whom I'm assuming are being kind of handheld to you through support and referral networks or agencies. And then there are the youth who are actively homeless and just out there on the street. Is the reception of the individuals who are kind of brought to you or pushed your way through an existing support network, is their reception to what you're trying to do for them different than individuals who literally walk up to you on the street who are actively homeless?
Most of the young people that we meet with are hungry for information about what options that they have. So in that regard, both populations are the same. They both want to know, are there housing programs to help me? Can you help me with advocacy or represent me on my legal rights to attend school, to get help from the child welfare system, to get the supports I might need either at school or from another provider? The difference might be where some of our folks who are this young man that I worked with who was living out of his car is in a really desperate situation and really dealing with his safety and security on a daily basis. And so he was very clear that he needed to get into much safer housing, and he needed to stay in school because being in school was the only place he had enough food and was able to move his life forward move out of homelessness.
Well, I guess another important component of the mobile legal office is the outreach that you're providing to immigrant children and undocumented youth who need legal support. Does that represent a significant proportion of the young people that you're interacting with right now?
This is an area where we're really, as a center, I think one of the things we're known for at the Center for Children's Advocacy is using innovative models to reach our clients, all of whom are vulnerable, they're low-income families, and so the mobile legal office we've really piloted that in terms of reaching homeless youth. And now really looking at the undocumented population and immigrant families, we've piloted taking our mobile legal office to locations where these families and young people are already getting help or may be seeking supports from some agencies. And so this is we're really trying this out and really thinking about being able to have bilingual, accurate legal information on site. We've partnered with some of the other agencies providing immigration assistance to some of the undocumented families and really been able to help young people who might have issues at school or young people who might be in abuse or neglect situations. And by partnering with the folks that they may be seeking services from, we've really been looking at this model to reach them.
Excellent. Well, as we know, complex issues often keep teens from taking full advantage of educational opportunities that are available to them, and abusive parents or caregivers, if you can call them that, homelessness, special needs, and other things like immigration issues or former incarceration add to the challenge. Teens might even be parents themselves, and they may need financial assistance so they can finish school, or as you pointed out, they need to stay in school just so they can eat. The Center for Children's Advocacy and the Teen Legal Advocacy Project was established in 1998. And thanks to the great work of our guest this morning, Stacy Violante Cote, the Teen Legal Advocacy Project is working well and utilizing their relatively new mobile legal office to reach these young people and give them the help they need. So, Stacy, thank you for the great work that you're continuing and your team is continuing to do. We have vowed to make our next broadcast with you from the mobile legal office, and we will make that happen in the next few months. So we look forward to coming out on the road with you and meeting and talking with some of these young people if they're willing to hear firsthand about the challenges they face. So thanks for being on the program.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.